Part 3. System. Kill. It is necessary under some circumstances, even in extremis, actions of compliance, to methodically destroy an opponent's infrastructure, along with the opponent himself. Sometimes an emphatic military victory is not enough. Sometimes the very earth must be salted, as the ancient texts put it. The principal arguments for this kind of action may be psychological, against a defiant people or species, or a matter of security, in that you are purifying a region of something too dangerous to exist. Neither of these arguments is especially comforting to a pragmatic commander. War is about accomplishment as well as victory. It should not be about supreme destruction. This kind of total war, this process of raising, is most commonly seen with shock or hyper-aggressive forces. The warriors of Angron, my brother Primarch of the 12th Legion, refer to it as totality, and even they employ it rarely to its full extent. From my brother Russ and the Wurgan Warcan to the Vulka Fenrika, we borrow the term Skira Vordrota, which may most usefully be rendered as system kill. Gilliman notes towards Martial Codification 4.1.9. Chapter 1, Mark 0.00.01. My brother, hear me. Warriors of the 17th Legion, hear me. This violence is against the code of the Legiones Astartes and against the will of our father, the Emperor. In the name of the 500 worlds of Ultramar, I implore you to cease fire and stand down. Open communication with me. Let us speak. Let us settle this. This action is an error of the most tragic kind. Cease fire. I, Rabut Gilliman, give you my solemn pledge that we will deal with each other frankly and fairly if these hostilities can be suspended. I urge you to respond. Gilliman puts the speaker horn down and looks at Gage in the Master of Vox. As soon as we are able, he tells them, transmit that message on repeat. Cycle transmissions, no interruptions. Yes, sir, says the Master of Vox. Mark 0.00.10. Leviathans stir. Bigger than the human mind can comfortably conceive, starships move through the burning clouds of dust above Kalth. Their dark hulks emerge from glittering banks of debris through swirling flares of ejected energy, like marine monsters surfacing for air. They are flying blind. They are fighting blind. They scream challenges and threats into the burning void through shorted Vox systems and blown speakers. They detach themselves from the supermassive gantries, derricks and anchorages of the yards, some shearing cables, lines and air gates in their desperation to run free. A moving target is harder to hit. That's the logic. In truth, a moving target makes itself alone and vulnerable. The warships of the 17th Legion make the kills appear effortless. Coasting, almost stately, they run forward, shields lit, creating bright halos around their hulls as dust and particulate matter burns off the fields. Their snarling gun ports are open, their primary weapons extended in their silo bays. Charge batteries and plasma capacitors seethe with power, ready for lethal discharge. They are supposed to be deaf and blind, too, but they are not. Detection and target systems beyond the darkest imaginings of the Mechanicum peer out into the noisy darkness and alight upon the scattering cobalt-blue vessels of the Ultramar fleet as though they were hot coals on cold ash. They find them and they bind them, tracking them relentlessly, scrutinizing them in lascivious detail, weighing and assessing their shielding and hull strength, while weapons batteries train and align and munitions loads are ordered up. Bulk magazines chug and clatter as projectile shells and missiles are conveyed by automatic loaders through deck hoists or ordnance chutes. Munitions fill the void like seed pods, like blizzards. Columns of scorching plasma and las hundreds of kilometers long, stripe after images on the retinas of those who witness them. Main lance batteries vomit bright energy and spit light in beams, in gobs, in splinters, in twitching withies of lightning. Ships burst in the darkness. The Gladius, a 4-kilometer-long escort from the Saramanth wing, serially detonates as it draws clear of its slipway, its armoured hull sectioned and chewed apart by internal explosions. The barge, Hope of Narmenia, is caught by a missile spread that strikes it like a storm of needles, puncturing its upper hull and stern in 100 places, peppering it, engulfing its interior in white-hot fire. The support carriers, Valediction and Bosphorus, are wrecked by sustained broadside fire from a battle barge of the 17th. The Valediction breaks up first, its hull plates unwrapping around a core explosion like a time-lapse feed of a flower's petals opening, blooming and dying. Hastily deployed lifeboats are swept away by the superheat wash. The Bosphorus, shielded by the fate of its sister ship, turns away to run, but the enemy guns reach it and pulp its drive section. Drive vents and engine bells explode, and the inward pressure forces a drive plant event, a series of star-hot overblasts in the engineering spaces that burst the stern of the carrier like a pipe bomb. The force of the blasts throws the ruined carrier forward on a pressure wave and slams the ship into the troop transport Antropheles, cutting it in two. 80,000 lives lost in 5 seconds. The Infernus-class battleship Flame of Purity, one of the true monsters of the 17th Fleet, runs into the Acertus orbital yard, firing cannonades to maximize collateral damage. Its prow is armored, a vast burnished ramming blade, a giant's chisel gilded with seraphs, narwhals and eagles. It plows through the smaller berthed ships in its path, bisecting some, ripping others open, shattering hulls. Its main spinal lance mount, a primary magnitude exo-las weapon, wakes and screams, uttering a shaft of matter-annihilating light that sends the picket cruiser, Stations of Ultramar, reeling from a hammering concussion as it attempts to defend the yard space. The cruiser tries to rally, trailing debris from a blackened and molten port side. It turns about, dazed, clumsily glancing against support stations and yard gantries. Clouds of pink flame belch from its stricken engines. It raises its shields. The Flame of Purity fires its recharged exo-laser again. The shields surrounding the Stations of Ultramar do not even retard the beam. They pop like soap bubbles. The beam vaporizes the cruiser's central mass until it's merely a toroid of hull metal around a glowing, white-hot hole. The Flame of Purity powers on, bumping the drifting ruin of the Stations of Ultramar aside on its magnetic bow wave. In the dark pits of drive rooms and engineering chambers, hosts of stokers and all works slave away with furious effort. The chambers are infernal, soot-caked and lit by the ruddy glare of the vast engines and reactor furnaces. Armies of stokers, sweat-sheened and roaring, eyes like white stones in blackened faces, shovel fuel ores and promethium pellets into the iron chutes. Servitor crews, their metal skins colour-bruised like old kettles by the constant heat, lever and haul in the throbbing activator rods that quicken the drive plants. Coal-black chains swing. Bellows wheeze and flush dragon-breath balls of roiling fire up flues and vent pipes. Abhuman labourers, troll-like and grunting, swelter as they drag in monolithic payload carts of raw fuel from the silo decks. There is frenzy here. Panic that is barely kept at bay by the lashes and orders of the engine room masters. There are no windows, no way of appreciating the outer universe or the threats it may contain. In truth, the envied bridge crews in their glass and gilt towers far above have no better understanding of the calamity than the blind stokers down in the dark below. Knowledge of this irony may not have enhanced the stokers' confidence. Many will never know the light again. Some of the ships slain during the Karth atrocity will continue to circle the tortured star for 100,000 years as frozen wrecks, as tomb ships for the silent dead, mummified and preserved in the act of screaming their final screams. Mark 0.00.20. Ventanus and Celaton hit the ground, The drop is severe. Their strength and their armor absorb the impact, and they come up, bolters ready. Dust and ash films their armor plate. They move. The module reaches the ground behind them, shredding open as it lands. The noise is huge, a splintering of metal. Behind the module comes the best part of one of the pylons. They can hear steel hawsers parting like bolter shots. Broken fastener pins, released by the extreme tension, whistle through the air like micro-missiles. Celoton and his captain outrun the falling pylon. It collapses like a tranquilized animal, buckling at the knees and then falling from loose hips, then from a slack neck that turns back against the direction of the fall. Dust erupts in a rolling wall as if driven by the sound of tearing steel. Ventanus and Celoton bound out of the dust wall. The landing platforms ahead of them are covered with debris and corpses. Ventanus blanches as he sees fallen ultramarines. Bolter fire has reamed and split their beautiful cobalt and gold armor. He sees one man who died carrying a regimental standard. It is a golden symbol of the Legion surmounting a double eagle. The banner pole is clenched so tightly in his armored fists that his grip has marked the haft. This was an honor guard, a ceremonial squad cut down as it prepared to board. Nearby, the bodies of city dignitaries, of trade officials, of seneschals, of aides and cargo foremen. They are bloody ruins, split sacks of meat and torn clothing. They were cut down by weapons designed for post-human war, weapons that could slay and have now slain the Legiones Astartes. Weapons whose effects on unmodified, unenhanced, unarmored humans amount to overkill. Celoton slows to a halt. He regards the litter of dead. "Move," Ventanus orders. "They were waiting to board," says Celoton, as if this matters. Ventanus stops and looks at his sergeant. It is so obvious, and yet he missed it. It has taken Celoton's less experienced mind to see the simple truth. They were waiting to board. They died, waiting to board, banners and standards raised. But it is perhaps 15 or 20 minutes since the disaster struck, 15 or 20 minutes since the orbital detonation that began the deluge of fire. Did they stand there all that time, still waiting to board, as the world caught light around them? "They were already dead," says Ventanus. "Dead or dying. This murder predated the disaster. At best, it was simultaneous. The disaster was no accident." Gunfire shrieks across the platforms. Lasfire spanks off the blast walls behind them. Bolter shells corkscrew the smoke they cut through. Impacts occur all around. Ventanus sees word-bearers advancing out of the filthy air. Troops move up with them, army cohorts with las rifles and halberds. They're shooting at any target they can see. Celoton, still confined by the ethical parameters of the universe he used to understand, asks the obvious question. "What do we do?" he says. "What do we do?"